This is your Sound Off Extra review for WWE Extreme Rules 2019 from the City of Extreme, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. What's going on, guys? We have a lot of people live in the chat here on YouTube. Extreme Rules is in the books. We have a new WWE Universal Champion. His name? A name you might be familiar with. You may have heard this name before. Brock Lesnar. Brock Lesnar is the first ever three-time WWE Universal Champion. What's going on, guys? We got everybody saying hello in the chat. Welcome. Thank you all for tuning in here tonight. This is the final stop here on the road to SummerSlam. And yes, indeed, we have a new Universal Heavyweight Champion. And it's funny, and I was going to come on here and I was going to say that I thought overall, on the whole, that this was a pretty good pay-per-view. I was really, on the whole, I was really enjoying the show for the most part. Up until, we got to that WWE title match and the Owens and Ziggler stuff. And then, kind of the latter half of the show, I don't want to say it fell off a cliff, but it just seemed like it kind of fell off a little bit there at the end. And that was a little disappointing. But then the main event, the main event redeemed it a little bit. I was not a fan of the second half as much as I was the first, and I don't know what everybody else thinks. I don't care what everybody else thinks. So I don't know if my opinion is on the mark or if I'm, if I'm in the minority on this. But judging by the poll results so far, I think a lot of people agree with me that on the whole, I'd give this a thumbs up. I think this was a thumbs up effort. It was not the best show that I've ever seen. It probably wasn't even the best show of the weekend. But I thought this was a pretty good pay-per-view. I saw some what I thought was harsh criticism of it. I didn't think it was as bad as some people were making it out to be that I saw. But in any event, we'll get into it here in a moment. The Twitter poll is open if you would like to vote at Solomonster on Twitter. We'll have results later in the show. I will also put the phone number up. We are going to take some live calls a little bit later on. What did you think of tonight's Extreme Rules show? Thumbs up, thumbs down, what'd you like, what you didn't like? I want to hear from you guys. And a shout out again to everybody in the live chat. Very active tonight. Super chats are open for those of you who wish to donate. They do help pay down some of the expenses of these live shows with the phone calls. And so they are, in fact, very much appreciated. And I want to give a shout out here before we move on, before we get into everything. I have to say that tonight's review is kindly sponsored by The Ridge, a slim front pocket wallet with RFID blocking technology to protect from data theft. I know a bunch of you guys have already cashed in using our code. You've gotten the wallets. You seem to like them. I don't see why you wouldn't. I have a couple of them myself, and I like them. They come in titanium, aluminum, carbon fiber. They can fit up to 12 cards in each wallet. They're even backed by a lifetime warranty, so you know you're getting your money's worth. You can even see, if you look at the graphic on your screen right now, look at that top photo there on top. That's one of the wallets I own myself. You see part of my Metro card. You see part of my Metro, my New York City Metro card. You can see a little bit there in the graphic. I just love the fact that I don't have the bulk in my pocket with my my old leather wallet. It looked like I was carrying a rock around in my pocket. Hello, ladies. And so I like the fact that I don't have that anymore. You get 10% off your first Ridge wallet, free worldwide shipping. All you got to do is punch in ridge.com/Solomonster. Use the promo code Solomonster at checkout, and you get 10% off of your purchase. So again, that's ridge.com/Solomonster. Get 10% off, courtesy of the Sound Off. Really doesn't get any better than that. And one more cool little announcement here before we move on. I got to mention this. This is the fact, I mentioned this on the podcast earlier. We are now, and this has been many months in the making, but you can now get the Sound Off on Pandora. Yes, on Pandora Radio, you can stream Solomonster Sounds Off each and every week. If you go to Pandora, the Pandora app on your phone, your device, there is a podcast section. If you type in Solomonster Sounds Off, you can, in fact, now stream the show each and every week in Pandora, the way that you can in Spotify and Stitcher and iTunes and all the other applications. And if one doesn't work, I guarantee you there'll be another one that does. And this is a very big deal for me. This has been in the works for a very long time. It's taken a lot longer than I would have hoped, but we are, in fact, on Pandora, and so please definitely check us out on there. I want to also just give a quick shout out to Sal Rex and Steve Mello for the artwork you see here tonight. You will not find two more talented people who do what they do, and I'm very lucky and very fortunate to be able to work with them, so shout out to them. All right, let's get into it here. We had two kickoff matches, one of which was added very late, that being the Finn Balor match defending the Intercontinental Championship against one Shinsuke Nakamura, who pinned Balor on SmackDown Live last week in a non-title match. If you recall, Balor won the Intercontinental Championship from Lashley earlier this year at WrestleMania, and since then, since WrestleMania 35, he has had, arguably, a very uneventful reign as the Intercontinental Champion. Now, he also disappeared from television for several weeks. If you remember, it may have been injury-related. He was part of that Money in the Bank ladder match a couple months ago. He took a wicked move. It was this sunset flip powerbomb that he took off a ladder onto a ladder. He bounced. He literally bounced off of this ladder. And I had heard conflicting reports that he suffered a back injury, his back was bothering him. I don't know, you know, to what extent his back may have been an issue. All I know is that he has been kind of missing in action for a while. We had a period of time, many weeks, where we didn't even see Balor on television. And I can only imagine that was injury related. But he's had a very forgetful reign, and Nakamura put an end to that here tonight. Balor went for the coup de grace. Nakamura shook the ropes and crotched him. He went for the Kinshasa. Balor countered that into a standing double foot stomp. Back up top for the coup de grace. Nakamura rolls out of the way. Running knee to the back of Balor's head. And he follows that up with the Kinshasa. And Shinsuke Nakamura claims his very first Intercontinental Championship in WWE. He has been the Intercontinental Champion before in New Japan. Never before in WWE until now. So he becomes only the second person to ever hold the IC title in both promotions, the first person being Chris Jericho. Chris Jericho is, was he a 10-time, I think, 9 or 10-time Intercontinental Champion? I think 9-time in WWE. And he won the Intercontinental title when he first came to New Japan, and so he has that on his resume. Nakamura becomes number 2. I think that title will look pretty good around Nakamura's waist. That title in white, it looked good around him in New Japan. So I can't imagine it's going to look much worse here in WWE. And you know what? It's good to see Nakamura back in a meaningful role after months on the back burner. I don't think he was hurt. I don't think he was in the doghouse. I just think they didn't know what to do with him. You know, they put him with Rusev for a while. Rusev, I don't know where the hell Rusev is. And they just sort of forgot about him and that he wasn't a priority. And it's kind of crazy when you think about all the fanfare he had when he first came into WWE. And he was wrestling AJ Styles for the WWE Championship and all of this stuff. And for him to just be on the back burner as just another guy is, you know, pretty amazing. Now they seem to have rediscovered him. It's like, oh, we have this guy under contract. We should probably do something with him. And we'll see where it goes. And just because he won the title, hey, Balor was the Intercontinental Champion, right? And they didn't do shit with him. So who's to say it'll be any different with Nakamura? But I have a glimmer of hope. The match itself, I thought it was a short match. It really wasn't anything special. But the title change was unexpected. And it was a nice surprise to see him get another win after the win on Tuesday. They gave him back-to-back wins over Finn Balor. None of this 50-50 bullshit. None of this nonsense where they trade wins and nobody gets over. He's got two straight wins over Finn Balor. And now he's the champion. The kickoff also had Philadelphia's own Drew Gulak defending the Cruiserweight title against the former champion Tony Nese. Good reaction for Gulak here in Philadelphia. They do call him the Philadelphia Stretcher, so you would expect that he would get a good reaction. Another short match. Gulak retained the title. Nese went up for the 450 splash. He did connect, although he connected mostly with his knees. And Gulak kicked out. Gulak hit a powerbomb for a 2 count, followed that up with the Cyclone Crash to retain his title. This was not the best showcase of what the Cruiserweights can do, but they got their shit in, and the right man won, and that really is the best thing I can say about this. The pay-per-view opened. Let's get into the actual Extreme Rules card. Pay-per-view opened with Roman Reigns and The Undertaker, the Graveyard Dogs. As their new t-shirt says. Yes, they had a new t-shirt made called The Graveyard Dogs. And they had this illustration on there of two dogs against Drew McIntyre and Shane McMahon. No holds barred. You know what? I'm not going to shit too much on that Graveyard Dog's name, and I'll tell you why. We have so many tag teams today in modern-day WWE. Rusev and Nakamura, Dash and Dawson, although they call them the Revival. But my point is this. So many tag teams that have very bland names, or they just use their last names. I think we're starting to turn a corner a little bit. We have Heavy Machinery, and we're starting to get some more of that. But for so long, they just had these pedestrian names. It was so boring. What happened to the days of Demolition and the Legion of Doom and the Hart Foundation and the British Bulldogs and the Killer Bee? I miss that. Strike Four. I miss all that stuff. So you know what? It isn't necessarily the best name in the world, and we may never ever see these two tag team ever again. But the Graveyard Dogs, whatever. At least it's an actual tag team name. This ended up being pretty fun, and Undertaker redeemed himself, clearly redeemed himself, after that awful match with Goldberg in Saudi Arabia, which I'm sure he was very much looking to do here. And if that was his sole mission, then mission accomplished. Tag team matches, here's my take coming out of this. Tag team matches are probably the best for The Undertaker at this point, because even though they could do Undertaker and Drew McIntyre next month, at SummerSlam, one-on-one, and I think they will. I do think that's the plan. And who knows, maybe it'll surprise me. But I have very serious doubts that that match is going to be any good, let alone as good as what we saw here. Even though it would be a huge spot for Drew McIntyre to be in, especially if he wins. I mean, you could say, well, you know, what does it really mean? Undertaker is older, and he's slower, and he's not the guy he used to be, but still, The Undertaker has cachet. He's still a big name. And if Drew McIntyre goes in there and he beats him, it means something. So it could mean a lot for him. And I'm not against it necessarily, but singles matches with The Undertaker? Eesh. Very much hit or miss these days. Reigns and McIntyre started things out. Undertaker got in there with Shane. He ran wild. He looked good. For the time he was in there, he looked good. He cleared off the announce desk at ringside, threatening to give Shane a last ride powerbomb through the announce table. Elias comes up from behind, smashes a guitar over the Undertaker's back. McIntyre lays out Undertaker and Roman Reigns with Claymore kicks. They put Undertaker on the announce desk. Shane climbs to the top rope, hits a diving elbow off the top rope through the table. Undertaker suffered a cut on his back. He was bleeding. To him, I'm sure it was just a flesh wound. In the ring, he had a coast-to-coast, Shane did, knocking a garbage can back into The Undertaker's face. And while McIntyre was outside dealing with Roman, Shane was dragging The Undertaker's dead carcass to the center of the ring when all of a sudden Undertaker did his zombie sit-up to a big pop. He gave Shane a choke slam, he gave Elias a choke slam, and then we got this great camera shot. And I gotta give credit to WWE production on this. Whether it's Kevin Dunn or whoever was responsible for this, kudos. Because they got this great camera shot of The Undertaker rolling his eyes back into his head. He was giving the throat slash for the tombstone. When in the background, behind Undertaker, you can see McIntyre slowly pop up behind him. It's a great shot. He was setting up for a Claymore kick. Roman, though, cut him off with a spear. He saved The Undertaker from doom. Roman grabbed Shane. He fed him to The Undertaker. He couldn't lift him up the first time. Shane came in a little too fast, but he tried again, got him up for the tombstone, and dropped him for the tombstone pile driver, and that is all she wrote. And you know what? They pinned Shane. They did not pin Drew McIntyre. To that extent, they protected Drew McIntyre, which makes me think they really are going to do Undertaker and McIntyre at SummerSlam. I mean, look, why bring back Undertaker for a match in July at a random show like Extreme Rules, but not for your second biggest show of the year 4 weeks later? So I would be, frankly, I'd be shocked if Undertaker does not end up going to Toronto and having a match next month. And on commentary, Michael Cole told us to enjoy it about The Undertaker because we don't know how many more of these appearances we have left in him. Well, you know what? He should be very happy. After what happened last month, he should be very happy with the way things went in this match. This was very good. We had an advertisement promoting Raw Reunion 1 week from tomorrow night, July 22nd in Tampa, Florida, calling it the largest reunion in WWE history. It's been a very long time since we got an old school Raw. That's basically what this is. You know, I had a couple of tweets. Oh, what does that mean? What does Raw Reunion mean? Well, you remember old school Raw? I'm sure that's exactly what it is. They're just giving it a new name. And they might be bringing in more people. But they're going to bring in a whole bunch of old faces. We'll probably get a bunch of skits. You know, one of the faces in the ad was Stone Cold Steve Austin. And I don't know when his new talk show on USA is premiering. He's got a new show coming soon to USA Network. But it would make sense to get him on Raw and start promoting it. You know, but anytime Stone Cold is on Raw, because we don't get to see him very often, he picks his spots. Austin very rarely shows up on WWE television. You know, before Raw 25, it may have been years since the last time we saw him on WWE TV. And I don't believe we've seen him since. When Stone Cold is on Raw, you've got my attention. And they also flashed other names, including Hulk Hogan, Ric Flair, Shawn Michaels, Ted DiBiase, Diesel, Razor Ramon, using those names, and Sergeant Slaughter, among a couple of others. So they're going to, look, they're loading it up. They want to try to pop a rating. That's the reason why they're doing this. Plain and simple. I don't know if there's any sports competition that night. I'm not aware of anything. You know, you guys can look it up. July 22nd, is there some big game that night? I'm not sure. But they're looking to pop a rating. And what's the easiest way to do that? Bring back old names. Bring in Hulk Hogan. Bring in Stone Cold. Bring in Ric Flair. That's how you pop a big rating. What's it going to mean in the long run? Absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. Because they're going to be on one show. That's it. And one show means nothing. But for one night, it should be fun. We had the Revival against the Usos for the Raw Tag Team Championship. Good match. The crowd was pretty quiet, though, for most of it. Dawson blocked a super kick, hit a brainbuster for a near fall. Superplex to Jey Uso. Dash Wilder up top for a big splash. Jimmy breaks up the pin with a Samoan splash. This whole thing broke down into a four-way. Both Revival members get taken out with super kicks. Jimmy blocks a tornado DDT from Dash Wilder, who tags in Scott Dawson, and they finished off Jimmy with the Shatter Machine to retain the tag team titles. I thought this was a good wrestling match. This was not the best effort that I'm sure these two could put forth. They worked with the time that they had. You know, I didn't time this match, but I don't think it went more than 10 minutes. Probably even a little less than that. And the Usos will have to wait another day to claim their 7th tag team championship. Let me just check the live chat here. We got a whole bunch of people in the chat. I want to give a shout out to everybody in the chat. Let's see, who we got here? We got Brian Hill. Shout out to him. We've got John Blonde. These names. We got Sam Cortez. All right, that's a normal name there. Patrick Sprull. What's going on, guys? It's a big wrestling weekend. It's too much wrestling this weekend. This was the culmination of a very busy wrestling weekend. I still haven't gone back and watched the Evolve show yet. I have to watch Evolve. I have to catch up with G1. It's too much. It's too much. We had Aleister Black and Cesaro. Cesaro, of course, is the one who knocks. He accepted the challenge of Aleister Black. This was Black's re-debut on the main roster. I love the hell out of this match. This was just a hard-hitting, stiff match between two great professional wrestlers. You can't ask for anything better than that. It took the crowd a while to really get into this. But once they finally did, they were into it. Black hit a moonsault off the top rope onto Cesaro on the floor. One of my favorite moments from this match, one of my favorite moments from this pay-per-view, was Cesaro catching Black in midair, coming off the top. He was going for, I think, a Meteora. And Cesaro caught him by his knees. He's got him by his knees, holding him up in the air. He propels him up into the air and catches him on the way down with a European uppercut. Very similar to the spot he did with Sami Zayn that time in their 2 out of 3 falls match in NXT, where he propelled him into the air, caught him with the uppercut on the way down. I never cease to be amazed when I see him pull off that move. And Aleister Black, you know, he's not a small person. And so to do that was very impressive. Cesaro is a freak of nature. He's been in this company now for how many years? How many years has he been in this company? Going back to developmental. It's got to be at least 5 or 6 years, maybe longer. And I still don't think they truly appreciate what they have in this guy. Freaking nature. Later on, Cesaro went for a springboard uppercut off the middle rope. Black caught him with a leaping knee strike. And Black got him in a knee bar. Cesaro transitioned into a sharpshooter, then a crossface. Black connected with Black Mass, which looked even more devastating on the slow-mo. And this was right around 10 minutes. Not a long match, but this was something else. I would not mind another match between these two men. And decisive a win as this was, I would not mind there being a rematch between these two superstars. It was competitive right up until the finish, but a big win, and really never in doubt. I mean, you had to have Aleister Black win his first match back. Otherwise, I mean, come on. You can't have him lose. That would be dumb. So, at this point in the pay-per-view, we were 3-for-3 on the main card. Forget the kickoff. We were 3-for-3 up to this point on the pay-per-view. Hell of a start. Then came Bayley, defending her SmackDown Women's Championship against Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross in a handicap match. Streak over! Which is not to say that this was a horrendous match or even a bad match, but this was average at best. And I think I'm being kind. Nikki and Alexa had to tag in and out per the rules of the match. It was not tornado rules. Bayley got Nikki in an Indian deathlock, and at the same time, she was able to lock Alexa Bliss in a crossface, so a double submission, simultaneous submission by Bayley, which I thought was pretty cool. Alexa bit her hand to break the hold. Twisted Bliss attempt, but Bayley got the knees up. Cross tagged in, also got a knee, and Bayley hit the elbow drop off the top rope on Nikki Cross for the win. Alexa was consoling Nikki when the match was over. She didn't beat her up. She didn't turn on her. She didn't walk away. So I guess this friendship continues, at least until Tuesday, but I'm sure this friendship is not meant to last. The match itself, very basic, and honestly, pretty boring. At least up until the end. Then we had Braun Strowman. Separated pelvis, injured spleen. What other injuries can we tack on here to this list? Braun Strowman against Bobby Lashley in a last man standing match. They brawled all over the building. Strowman suplexed Lashley into the merchandise wall at one of the merch stands on the concourse. The cameraman was furiously shaking the camera. So much I thought he might have been having a seizure. If not, he probably gave somebody watching a seizure. Probably gave a whole bunch of people watching a seizure. It was a fucking suplex, not a nuclear explosion. Shaking the camera is not going to make it hurt any more than it already does. Idiots. So they brawled down the steps. Through the crowd, Strowman gets Lashley up on his shoulder, but Bobby floats over, spears Strowman through the barricade back to ringside, and Braun's head came within inches of striking the ring steps. That was terrifying, how close he came to cracking his skull open. He's very, very lucky. Lashley tackled Braun over the announce desk and overturned the announce desk on top of him. They tried to make it like, well, he can't get up now. He's covered in debris, as if this announce desk weighs 1,000 pounds. Of course, Braun was able to crawl out from underneath. He ends up launching Lashley through the air. Now, they brawl back into the crowd first. He launches Lashley through the air onto what I think was the Chinese announce table. It's that area where they have all the international announcers next to each other. I'm pretty sure it was the Chinese or Mandarin, whatever it was. He launches him onto the announce table, onto the announcers. They brawl back up the steps through the crowd. Strowman gives Lashley a power bomb, or not a power bomb, what the hell am I saying? A power slam. Gives him a power slam through a crash pad down below that we couldn't see. And they built this makeshift wall down below. It looked like it was made out of cardboard or plasterboard, some very thin material. But there's a wall. And so when the referee was counting, Strowman, I'd say when the referee got to about, I don't know, 6 or 7 maybe, he punches his way through the wall in this great visual. Lashley cannot respond to the count of 10, and Braun Strowman is your last man standing. I like this. I like this. And from what I saw, the majority opinions, I think most people like this. It was far from the most violent last man standing match. There was no blood. There really wasn't anything overly extreme about it. But they beat the hell out of each other. And I thought the finish looked pretty cool. It was a good visual with Braun Strowman busting through the wall like he was the Incredible Hulk. You know, like he was the Shockmaster, but without falling on his face. And the crowd ate it up. The crowd loved every second of this. And let's be honest, Braun Strowman badly needed this win. I don't know where you go from here with Braun Strowman. The idea of him challenging for the Universal Championship, I mean, Brock has the belt back now, which I'll talk about later. So Lesnar is champion again. Could you build to Braun Strowman and Brock Lesnar? You could. I don't know why the fuck you would want to, because God knows we've seen this before, and every single time Strowman has failed. I don't really have any interest in seeing Braun Strowman challenging for the championship, so if he doesn't challenge for the championship, I don't know what you do with him. But if you're Braun Strowman, you needed this win in the worst way. This guy put you in the hospital. Nobody's heard from you for 2 weeks. You've lost all your momentum. There was no outcome here that really made sense other than Strowman getting a big win. And he got one. And he had to work for it. He had to work his ass off for it. And I thought this was a good brawl. Check back in to see what's going on in the chat with everybody. Let's see what's going on here. Got a whole bunch of people. We got six. What do we got here? 1,600, 1,700 people live on a Sunday night post Extreme Rules. Thank you again, everybody, for tuning in. We are going to take your phone calls a little bit later on. I want to give a shout out here to Lamborghini. Let's see, who is this? Lamborghini L3G. What are these fucking names? Come on, people. You could come up with better names than this. Here we go. Alexis Ramirez. Thank you for tuning in here tonight. We've got Julian Bell, Justin Goodman. Who else we got? Patrick. I mentioned Patrick a little bit earlier on. David Fox, Young Bibby. What's going on, guys? Let's move on here. And by the way, Super Chats are open. Again, for those of you who wish to contribute, you may do so in the chat. Super Chats are open, and I appreciate everybody who does contribute. Actually, you know what? Let me hold on a second here. I should probably take a look at what's going on with that. Because I didn't have it open in front of me. I suppose I should have it open in front of me. And let's take a look.
You're on David Fox, Young B.
Shut up, you idiot. Had to shut myself up there. But yes, Super Chats are open. I don't see any in front of me right now. But if there are any, I will try to read them after. So up next, we have the SmackDown Tag Team titles on the line. Daniel Bryan and Rowan. The New Day and Heavy Machinery for the SmackDown Tag Team titles. I thought this was really good stuff. We had the obligatory Big E shoulder tackle, which always terrifies me when I see this. He tackled Bryan to the floor. Otis teased a dive through the ropes, but when he hit the ropes, he stopped short. He very calmly climbed out onto the apron and did a very safe splash out to the floor. His partner, Tucker, he's a daredevil, this guy. He climbed up to the top, hit a high cross body, and wiped everybody out outside the ring. Back inside, compactor by Heavy Machinery. They had Big E beaten until Woods made the save at the very last second. Bryan hit a top rope headbutt to Big E and transitioned into the lapel lock. He tied up Big E's arm. He grabbed his leg. He was trying everything he could to stop this guy from grabbing the ropes, and yet Big E still had one leg free. And he managed to take that one free leg and put it under the bottom rope, and he broke the hold. Then we got flashes of serious Big E. The Big E who I think one day could compete for the WWE Championship. Bryan starts throwing kicks. Big E is no-selling them. Big E is actually shouting at Daniel Bryan, "Do it! Do it," he says. Bryan slaps him. "Do it again!" Bryan slaps him again. He tried again, but this time Big E turned him inside out with a clothesline. He whipped Bryan into the corner. Bryan climbed the ropes and went to do his little flip-over move, but Big E caught him on the way down. He caught him on his shoulder. Woods off the top rope, up, up, down, down, and Woods pins Bryan to win their sixth tag team championship. The Usos failed to win their seventh tag team title, but the New Day manages to win their sixth here on this show. New Day has all the gold. They've got the SmackDown Tag Team titles. They've got the WWE Championship. So they've got all the gold, or silver, as it were. You know, I didn't expect a title change. That was surprising to me. And I don't think the New Day needed, in fact, I don't think, I know, New Day did not need to get those belts back. New Day does not represent some kind of fresh start on SmackDown Live. So they did not need this. But I cannot hate on this match. Or even the finish, because I thought it was actually very well done. Big E catching Bryan in midair the way he did was awesome. Freakishly strong is Big E. And here's the other thing to note. They did not pin Heavy Machinery. I was sure that Bryan and Rowan were going to retain the titles and one of them would pin either Otis or Tucker to win this match. And they didn't do that. They actually protected them to the extent that they could. I mean, obviously they lost. But remember, you know, Heavy Machinery, how many months have they been on television? Let's think about this. Heavy Machinery really has not been on TV for very long. Hasn't been a very long time since they've been on the main roster. So there's going to be plenty of time for them yet to go on to win the tag team titles. You know, they've only been on TV a few months. I think in due time, they'll have their moment. Tonight did not have to be that night. We had Paul Heyman come out to cut a promo, and he's in Philadelphia, so he's right at home. And he gave us a spoiler. He said that Brock Lesnar would cash in his Money in the Bank briefcase tonight. He said, the question is, am I telling you the truth? Or am I Paul Heyman? He dropped the mic, and he walked off. As it turned out, he was giving us a spoiler. Who knew? We then had AJ Styles challenging Ricochet for the United States Championship. Anderson and Gallows, the newly signed Anderson and Gallows, attacked Ricochet before the bell. And that really was the story here. It played into the finish. I thought these two had a good match. I really didn't think it was anything more than good. Pele kicked by Styles, followed by a brainbuster. Ricochet kicked out. Shooting star press off the top rope by Ricochet, but AJ's foot was underneath the bottom rope, as Anderson pointed out. Referee didn't see it right away. Up top goes Ricochet. Anderson tries to cause the distraction, and so while the referee is tied up with Anderson, Gallows crotches Ricochet on the top rope, and so he's hanging upside down in the corner. AJ climbs up to the middle rope, and he hits a super Styles Clash backwards, like a reverse Styles Clash off the middle rope on the inside for the win. And here's my question. Was I the only one watching this as AJ hit that move, saying to myself, please don't tuck your chin. Please don't tuck your chin. That's all I kept thinking. Please do not tuck your chin. I get so nervous. There's no reason for it, really. I mean, how many... AJ hurt a few people, but it wasn't really his fault. It was like two or three people who tucked their chin when they weren't supposed to. This was many years ago. And for the most part, every time he hits the move on somebody, they know exactly how to take the move. It's actually a pretty basic move. But yet, still, you know that if somebody... You know, when you're a wrestler, based on what everybody has always said, you're taught inherently to, when you take certain bumps and whatnot, you tuck your chin to protect yourself. And so really, when you take the Styles Clash, it's counterintuitive to what you as a professional wrestler would normally do. So maybe somebody has a brain fart. Maybe they're just not thinking clearly. And you tuck your chin and you could break your neck. And he did this move off the second row. Thankfully, Ricochet is a pro. He knows what he's doing. And he was just fine. But AJ did get the pin, and so we have a new United States champion. He claims his third U.S. title. I don't like that they're playing hot potato with that thing. Not that it matters. I mean, it's the U.S. title, so who really cares, I guess. But I guess they felt they had to give the win to AJ because he's this newly minted heel. He's newly aligned again with Gallows and Anderson. You got to give them some momentum, and they didn't want them to lose. So, you know, they put the championship on him. And they don't do automatic rematches anymore. At least that's what they claimed. That's what Triple H said. Or Stephanie or whoever it was 7 months ago. We don't give automatic rematches anymore for champions who lose the title. Now, challengers, that's a different story. They get title shot after title shot after title shot. Baron Corbin is the perfect example. How many title matches did this guy get? At least three? Two or three? But if Ricochet, let's say, were to win the right on TV in the next few weeks to challenge for the U.S. title again, they could do the ladder match that I suggested to blow this whole thing off at SummerSlam. Ladder match, U.S. title, Ricochet, AJ Styles. Why not? You don't think a ladder match between AJ and Ricochet would be an awesome match? As good as any match either one of them could probably hope for at SummerSlam this year. And here's another, I'll add this onto this too. You know, being that they took the Intercontinental title off of Finn Balor. I have no idea what their plans are for him. And I know he's supposed to be on SmackDown. And AJ and the club and all those guys, Ricochet, they're all Raw talents. But I would love to see Finn Balor cost Ricochet the ladder match, if they were to do one, at SummerSlam and join with the club. Because why not? Why not? What the hell else are they going to do with Balor right now that could possibly be more interesting than aligning him with his old buddies? And you know, eventually they could build to a rift or a split. Eventually you know exactly where this leads. AJ and Balor. It's just a matter of how long you want to drag it out for. But I think an AJ Balor Gallows Anderson faction, whether it's on Raw or SmackDown, could be very interesting. So I put that idea out there. We had Kevin Owens against Dolph Ziggler. This went exactly as long as I would have hoped that it should have gone. All of 16 seconds by my count. Kick wham stunner. Owens wins. He grabs the mic. After the match, he says, "Look, I fully expected when I got here to be suspended or even fired by Shane McMahon, but Shane got taken out by The Undertaker. So, I guess lucky me." And he told Shane he could kiss his ass and go to hell. So there's your SummerSlam match. I'm thinking Shane McMahon against Kevin Owens, and probably Undertaker one-on-one against Drew McIntyre. Owens beats Shane and sends him off television for a while. I know, wishful thinking, but we could always hope. And Drew puts down the dead man. That's the way you do it. That's the way you do it at SummerSlam. But I still, you know, watching Owens here, and I think he could be a big babyface, but I was talking about this on the podcast on 608 earlier today. I just can't shake, when I watch Owens doing the whole kick wham stunner thing, I cannot shake the whole discount Stone Cold feeling when I see him using the stunner like that. Maybe over time he can sort of make it his own, but maybe, you know, and I thought it might work, but the more I watch it, maybe it's just a case where that move is so iconic and it's just so forever associated with Steve Austin that I'm just not going to be able to watch anybody else use it without just feeling, hey, you're just a discount version of Steve Austin. I don't know. Maybe I'm the only one who feels that way. We had Kofi Kingston defending the WWE Championship against Samoa Joe. Let me just check some things out here in the chat. Oh, we got more people. We got even more people in the chat here. So that's pretty cool. We had Kofi Kingston and Joe for the title. Joe dominated much of the match. Chants of, "We want Lesnar, no we don't. We want Lesnar, no we don't." We also got them during the main event. Same chants. Joe placed Kofi's hand at one point between the ring steps and stomped on it, and Kofi screamed in agony. Later on, Kofi got a near fall on an SOS. He went for the Trouble in Paradise, but Joe got him in the clutch, the Coquina clutch. Kingston tried to push off the ropes, and Joe just let him fall flat on his back. And when he fell flat, Joe hit a standing senton. Joe ran the ropes, and in coming off the ropes a couple minutes later, he got caught with the Trouble in Paradise. And 1, 2, 3. Out of nowhere, just like that, Kofi Kingston, under 10 minutes, retains the WWE title. I thought this was disappointing. This was very disappointing. And I don't know exactly what I was expecting. I honestly wasn't expecting a title change. I was kind of hoping, but I wasn't expecting it. I figured that Kofi is going at least until SummerSlam with that championship. And maybe longer. But I just, I don't know. I was expecting maybe a longer match. I don't know. But I was expecting something more from these two. And I didn't get it. But whatever it was, whatever it was that I was expecting, it was more than what we got here. And sadly, Joe was exactly in the role that I figured he would end up being in. He was the placeholder. He was the placeholder spot for Kofi to get Kofi to SummerSlam. He's another warm body like Ziggler and like Owens and like Zayn and like Bryan that Kofi could beat to build credibility and move on to SummerSlam. Nothing more, nothing less. I mean, I don't see any reason to even come back with this match a second time. What's the point? Right? I guess you could say the same thing for Black and Cesaro, but they had a great match. That's why I'd like to see it again. This match wasn't really all that great, but he had a title match. He lost. So that's it. Joe moves to the back of the line, and what you do with him, I don't know. But this was his shot, and he lost, and that's that's the end of that. That's the way I see it. And the thing about Joe, all talk, no action. Samoa Joe is the new Bray Wyatt. That's what he is. He's the new Bray Wyatt. He talks a big talk. I would even argue he's the best talker in the entire company, one of the best in all of wrestling. He can certainly sound like a badass, but he never delivers on his threats. Empty threats. That's all they are. We are going to review the main event here in a second. Before we do, let me go ahead here and throw this up on the screen. There you see it. 989-282-SOLO. 989-282-SOLO 7656. That is the phone number to call. We are going to be taking calls in a little bit once I am done with the full review here, as I take a quick drink. Oh my goodness. I had to turn the air conditioner off. You know, when I do these live reviews, the air conditioner is so fucking loud. So I had to turn it off, and I am just... It's like, you know, when you watch Brock Lesnar about 2 minutes into pretty much any one of his matches and he's like dripping sweat, that's pretty much me right now. And so, whatever, it's all good. It's all good. Even though I showered before this review, I'll have to take another one at 2 a.m, but that's okay. The things I do for these live reviews, the things I do for all of you, I don't mind it. I love it. Let's see here. We got one super chat I want to give. Oh, Brian Becerra. Florida Freebird Brian Becerra donated $20 in the super chat. Thank you, Freebird, one of the longtime loyal listeners of the podcast, Brian Becerra. So again, thank you for the super chat, which are open and very much appreciated. Every time I take a phone call, it does cost money. That's just the way I have it set up. So every little bit helps as far as that goes. But there you see the phone number on the screen. And then we get to the main event. Becky Lynch and the man's man, Seth Rollins, against Baron Corbin and Lacey Evans in an Extreme Rules Mixed Tag Team Winners Take All match for the Universal and Raw Women's Championships. It's Extreme Rules, so lots of kendo stick shots, chair shots, as you would expect. Rollins and Lynch, at one point, they set up two tables outside the ring. They're so... I guess we're supposed to think that they're so cute. You know, what one does, the other does. They follow each other. So they set these two tables up on the outside, and they came into play a little bit later on. Becky hit a leg drop from the middle rope through the table, through Lacey Evans, who was laid out on the table. Rollins did this huge leap off the top rope. He frog splashed Baron Corbin down through the table on the outside of the ring. So a double table spot on the outside. Rollins brings Corbin back inside the ring, and Corbin ends up rallying here, hits a deep six, and gets a very close near fall. Becky Lynch breaks it up. I actually thought that was very well done. So now comes the real sort of apex here of this match, the big spot of the match, which is that Baron Corbin delivers to Becky Lynch an end of days. And the fans did not like this at all. It was actually an excellent spot. It got great heat. They zoomed in on Seth Rollins, who watched it happen. He was just stunned. And he was angry, and he was beside himself. And the great thing, and I got to give credit to Baron Corbin here. I will actually give credit to Baron Corbin. He hits this end of days on Becky Lynch, and they zoom in on him as he's looking down in the corner at Seth Rollins, and you can just read his lips, and he says, "What are you going to do, you little piece of shit?" I almost became a Baron Corbin fan at that moment. Almost. Not quite, but almost. And so Rollins loses his shit. He hits Corbin with repeated kendo stick shots over and over and over again. He hits not one, not two, but three blackouts, curb stomps, call them whatever the hell you want, and he scores the pin. Becky Lynch and Seth Rollins retain their titles, and then Brock Lesnar's music hits. Paul Heyman has delivered on his promise. Brock comes out. He's in full ring gear. He is in Philadelphia here on this B-show pay-per-view. He comes down to the ring, he hits two suplexes, two Germans on Seth Rollins, he points to Paul Heyman on the outside, Heyman hands the briefcase over to the referee, the bell rings, and once the bell rings, that signifies that this is in fact an official cash-in. And one F5 later, Brock Lesnar is the first ever three-time Universal Champion. And the announcers are talking about how Seth Rollins was spent. Not only was he spent physically as an excuse for why he lost his championship, which is true, he had just wrestled the full match. They said he is also spent, what did they say, emotionally or mentally, whichever word they used, because he had just watched his girlfriend get beaten up by Baron Corbin. That's like watching Enzo Amore punk out Joey Janela at a Blink 182 concert. I said this in my Fight for the Fallen review on the podcast earlier. He should have come out last night at that pay-per-view with a brown paper bag over his head and a sad face painted onto it. We have video proof that this man backed away from a fight with Enzo Amore. I don't see how he could ever live that down. So here, Seth was just, he was psychologically scarred at the idea that Baron Corbin had beaten up his girlfriend, making all kinds of excuses for why he lost the championship here. But the point of all this is, Brock Lesnar is once again the Universal Champion. Brock Lesnar, and really the Universal Champion, is the top champion in the company. That is the way the Universal title has been treated now for a very long time. It has been treated as the top title in the company, not Kofi Kingston, not the WWE title on SmackDown. The Raw Championship has been treated as the top title in that company for a very long time. And Brock Lesnar ain't going to be on TV any more than he has been in the past. So unless he turns right around and drops this title back to Rollins or to somebody else at SummerSlam, guess what? We've got a part-time champion again here on the main roster. Now, I could appreciate them doing a title change. It was different. I wasn't sure if they'd have the balls to go ahead on this show and do the cash-in, but they did. So in that respect, it was kind of exciting until the actual result kind of sets in and you realize, oh shit, Brock Lesnar is the champion again. All of that work to get the title off of him and to get the title onto Seth. Oh, he's the Beast Slayer. He slayed the beast. Just to put the belt back on Brock just seems counterproductive to me. It just seems very counterproductive. Now, where do you go from here? Do you just do a straight rematch at SummerSlam between Rollins and Lesnar? Do you do Braun Strowman and Brock Lesnar? These are all matches that we've already seen before. You know, Paul Heyman is supposed to be taking over Raw. We're supposed to get a new vision for Monday Night Raw. How does that fit into the new vision? How does Braun Strowman against Brock Lesnar fit into this new vision for Monday Night Raw? How does another match that we saw at WrestleMania, I mean, we've seen it even before WrestleMania, how does Seth Rollins against Brock Lesnar fit into the new vision for Monday Night Raw? Or does Bray Wyatt maybe somehow fit into that vision? I was kind of hoping they would set up for Rollins and Wyatt at WrestleMania. Now the title is off of Seth. He shouldn't be owed his automatic rematch as per the new rule they put into place 7 months ago, but that never stopped them. Who knows? Maybe Bray Wyatt factors into this. Maybe they're going to give him a shot. Maybe they're going to debut him in a program against Brock Lesnar. I don't know. Maybe that's a good thing. Because now we'll all tune into Raw tomorrow night to see what the direction is for this championship. But the idea that they would just put the belt back on Brock Lesnar just seems like old hat. I don't see what that accomplishes. Who even knows if this fucking guy will be on Raw tomorrow night? Who's to say he will even be on the show tomorrow night? So, for a pay-per-view that I was enjoying for the most part, again, I won't say that it fell off a cliff. I wouldn't say that that's entirely fair or accurate, but a much stronger first half to this show, in my opinion, than the second half. So let's throw it to the Twitter poll so far. Let me bring it up here, because we have, let's see, the Twitter poll has been up for a little while. Last I checked, there were way more thumbs up than thumbs down. And I would have to assume that that has not changed much in the time since I have last checked, but we're going to find out right now. Just give me a second here. So here we go. There it is. That is the poll. Now you can see the time. I mean, that poll is an hour old at this point. But this was the screen cap I grabbed before I started recording. As of an hour ago, we already had almost 1,200 votes, and we had 68% thumbs up, 32% thumbs down in the poll. So to me, that is a decisively thumbs up score for most of you for this pay-per-view here tonight. And I'm checking the live poll results right now, and honestly, they haven't changed much. The live poll right now has over 2,000 votes, 66 up, 34 down. So not radically different than what you see there on your screen right now. So I think most people are pretty much in agreement that this, on the whole, was a pretty good pay-per-view, even though towards the end, maybe it wasn't quite as good. But this was a pretty solid effort, I would say, tonight from WWE. Not their best foot forward, but, you know, I can't criticize, you know, too many of those early matches because the effort was there. I was entertained enough by the matches. I questioned the end. I questioned the logic and the reasoning and what they did towards the end of the show. And I was very disappointed in Kofi and Joe the more I think about it. I just very disappointed in that match. I was expecting and hoping for more. But on the whole, I would give Extreme Rules a thumbs up. I think to give it a thumbs down would be kind of unfair. But let's see what you guys think, because I want to hear from you, because we do want to take phone calls. There's the number, 989-282-SOLO. Again, 989-282-7656. Let's take our first batch of calls here. This first caller here is area code 407. You are on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hey, Jason, it's Glenn. How are you? From Chicago.
Hi, Glenn. How are you doing?
I'm hanging in there.
So what did you think of the pay-per-view tonight?
I've lost interest in WWE lately because, number one, AEW, I mean, I'm not a big mark for them, but something different. It's a new direction. I think that WWE is oversaturated, as do a lot of people. But did I enjoy the show? Yeah, I'd give it a thumbs up. Would I say it was the show of the weekend? Probably not. I didn't see all the shows. I have no desire to watch Evolve. You know, 9.5 year anniversary. Let's get that straight. But my question for you is: give me one or two funny answers, not the real answers. Give me one or two funny answers as to why that big box was there in the exit way, you know, blocking the exit way for the end of Braun Strowman and Bobby Lashley. Because we all know it's a show, we all know it's scripted, but, you know, isn't it supposed to be like something, you know, like kind of like believable? Something that you would make, you know, oh, it's believable. WrestleMania spot was believable because it was near the trust and all the equipment. It didn't seem believable to have one entrance blocked off.
Right. So what I think is that they were going to do something with the gobbledygooker. Instead of an egg, they were going to have him come out from behind the box. And I don't know what happened. I don't know if maybe the egg didn't hatch. I have no idea. Maybe when Lashley got slammed, he actually killed the gooker. I have no idea. So you wanted an answer. That's about as good of an answer as I can give you. The answer is I have no fucking idea. They don't think of these things. They don't care. They're putting on a production. It's a show to them. They don't look at it like, oh, we got to make everything feel real. See, people like you and me, we want to think like, okay, they're putting the thought into at least pretend, right? That they're giving the illusion that this is actually real. But it's to them, it's just a theatrical production. I don't think they really think too hard about that kind of stuff. So you and I can come up with the explanations for what it is. But in the end, you know, it's like when they show the crash pad from above. They have that aerial shot. I have no idea why they show that. There are times when guys will disappear into this black hole. They'll disappear into the abyss, and it's like, holy shit, you know, that could be a 20-foot drop. And then they have this aerial shot. You can see it's like a 5-foot drop. I'm like, why would you show that? Doesn't make any sense. Why would you show that? But that's just what they do. Let's go to area code 323. We're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Yo, what's up? I'm Jonathan calling from South Central LA.
What's going on, Jonathan? Jonathan, are you there? I guess Jonathan is not there, so we'll let Jonathan go. Let's go to area code 718. I know that area code because that is a Brooklyn, New York area code. You are on the air.
How you doing, Sean Moss? This is Quintus Brown from Brooklyn.
Hey, Quentin, what's going on? A fellow Brooklynite. What'd you think of the pay-per-view tonight?
Oh, the pay-per-view was great. I don't know if you enjoyed it. Some certain parts I didn't like. The Kofi match, I guess. It was just boring to me. I'm kind of over it with the title win, the title run. So I have two questions. One funny. Right.
No, sure. I'm sorry. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I have two questions. One quick. Do you see like Kofi and Roman Reigns match in SummerSlam? And the funny question is, which announced team do you like find more annoying? The Raw announced team or the AEW announced team? Because I found there's no chemistry at AEW commentary team.
Yeah, you know, I talked about this when I talked about Fight for the Fallen earlier today, and I'll have that review up on the YouTube channel if you didn't listen to the full podcast, probably tomorrow, hopefully tomorrow. But I think Jim Ross and Excalibur are okay together. Jim Ross has his moments. Sometimes it just sounds like he's totally bored with the show, or even he's a little, I don't know, ticked off about stuff. Excalibur, I think, on the whole, is pretty good. I think if you kept it to a two-man booth, they wouldn't be half bad. You throw in Alex Marvez, and he seems like a nice guy, but he has no business being in the announce booth. So it just really brings down the quality of the team. Does it annoy me? I don't think it annoys me. I just think there's a lot of room for... It doesn't annoy me the way that the Raw announce team annoys me with their over-the-top commentary and a lot of the bullshit they have them say. So to answer your question, no. The AEW announce team does not annoy me as much as the Raw announce team does. As far as SummerSlam, Kofi and Roman, that's interesting. Because Roman, look at tonight. They had Undertaker basically endorse this guy. I don't want to call it a passing of the torch because I think that's so cliched. Everybody uses, passing of the torch. Undertaker's not going anywhere. Passing of the torch implies that, okay, it's all you now. I'm going to step aside. Undertaker's not stepping aside. Undertaker will be 75 years old. He'll still be coming down the aisle for a fucking match. So it wasn't a passing of the torch, but it was sort of another endorsement of... It's your yard now, and I'm going to leave the ring to you, right? Even though Roman left, and he kind of left the ring to The Undertaker after that, and Undertaker went out last. But my point in mentioning that is that they've sort of built up a little bit of goodwill. I wouldn't say Roman was, like, booed unmercifully, and there were definitely boos for him tonight. And if you put him in there against Kofi, I think you sort of undo a lot of that goodwill, frankly, that he has built up. I think it would be worse for him than anything else, because people are not going to want to cheer for Roman Reigns, I don't think, over Kofi Kingston. I think it would be just the opposite. Is that the reaction they want to go for? Do they really want to do babyface against babyface and risk having the people turn on Roman Reigns after him coming back from the illness and, you know, kind of building up all that goodwill? I don't think they do, but what do you do with Roman Reigns at SummerSlam if he doesn't challenge for the championship? Who do you put him in there against? I mean, him and Undertaker, they just beat Shane and McIntyre. We can't possibly do Roman Reigns again against Shane, against Drew McIntyre. We got it at WrestleMania. We got it two or three other times. We got it again tonight. You can't do it again at SummerSlam. And if Shane is going to be occupied by Kevin Owens, what do you do with Roman? It's a good question. I don't know. That may be the most logical spot for him. But I think it would actually work against them if they did that. I think that would be a mistake. And anyway, so that was my two cents on that. Let's go to 917. You are on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
How you doing, Jason? Is this Marcus from Brooklyn?
Hey, Mark. Oh, another Brooklynite. What's going on, Marcus?
Nothing, man. Just, you know, this Brock thing just really got me just annoyed. I mean, like you said, like, we pulled the head into, like, this new change or whatever with Paul Heyman, Eric Bischoff, and now tonight. I just feel like with Raw, it could be the same old, you know. And SmackDown could SmackDown out last hope for any change. But I didn't expect Brock to cash in on Seth. I thought he would cash in on Kofi. I figured with the SmackDown move to Fox, I figured Fox would want Brock as champion. Also, you know, I'm kind of like the other caller. I'm sick of Kofi as champion. I think the fairy tale run is over with. He needs to drop that title to anyone right now.
Well, I mean, do you have anybody? You have any names in particular that you'd like to see him drop that title to, or just it doesn't matter as long as he drops it?
Almas, I think Almas should be a good person to do it too. I mean, I figure, you know, before this, you know, AJ won the belt, I thought maybe for a second, because, you know, the wild card rule, you know, it doesn't matter. I thought maybe they could maybe do AJ and Kofi at SummerSlam and do, like, Big E and Xavier against Luke Gallows and Colin Anderson and something like that.
Yeah, that, you know what, that's, and thank you for the call. That's not a bad idea. It's funny you bring up Almas. I almost forgot about him. And it's not as though they've really been pushing him too hard on TV, but I'm a big fan of Almas. And so if they wanted to actually go down that road and really push the guy and have him and Kofi at SummerSlam, I don't know if he would win. I could see that being the match at SummerSlam, but Kofi retains. But Almas winning the WWE Championship and getting a run with Zelina Vega, hey, I'd be all in on that. Sure, why not? We know the guy is great in the ring. Maybe promos aren't his strongest suit, but that's why he's got Vega in his corner. So Almas and Kofi for the championship at SummerSlam. That's a match I could get behind. Let's go to 757, if I can get this to activate. There we go. 757, you're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hey, Solomon. My name is David, and I'm calling from Chesapeake, Virginia.
Hey, David.
Well, Solomon, I got to tell you, this was quite an interesting show. Given how good it was and given the ending, it felt like they take one step forward and they took another step back.
Yeah, you know, with the Brock thing, I guess I kind of look at it the same way. It's just, I don't know, it just feels to me we're right back where we were before. You kind of made progress by getting the belt at least on somebody full time, and you can get away from the whole Lesnar, because Brock can be doing a whole bunch of other things. He doesn't necessarily have to be the champion. And now it just sort of feels like, well, we're right back where we were, and where do we go from here? Does he just drop it back to Seth, or is there somebody new that they have in mind? Or even worse, does he not lose it at SummerSlam, and he just sort of carries it on for many more months to come? I guess that's the question that we'll have to wait and find the answer out to.
This is a shit ton of things I want to ask, like I said, but there are specifically three things I like want to point out. One question I have for you is exactly how exactly do you feel about Corey Graves' commentary? Now don't get me wrong. Corey Graves is witty. He's funny, and he brings a different approach to commentary. But my thing is, as of late, Corey Graves' commentary has been really insufferable to me, because lately he's become way too dimensional. Because one of his things is, his whole thing is basically drooling over blondes, and the other thing is his whole commentary career can basically come off as constantly bickering with Byron Saxton. To me, does that ever annoy you?
I get annoyed pretty easily. You know, the thing with Corey Graves, it's kind of funny that you mentioned Corey Graves. I was about to read one of the super chats. I'm sorry, some of the other ones I missed, but we got one here from James Hollins, who donated $10. A shout out to him. But his super chat was, Corey Graves is the worst announcer on the planet. That comes from James. James clearly has not listened to Alex Marvez on any of the AEW shows. Although, to be fair, Marvez is not so much annoying as he just doesn't feel like an actual commentator. He just doesn't feel like he's right for that role. So you are not the only one who has expressed that same opinion, who feels the same way. Do I find Corey Graves annoying from time to time? The answer is yes. Of course. Absolutely. Of course I do. He can be insufferable sometimes. And not just the stuff with Byron. I don't even necessarily mind that sometimes. But just some of the things that he says, or some of the things that they have him say, is, you know, just, ugh. It's just ridiculous. He's just so over the top sometimes. And, you know, he did something else tonight that also annoyed me. And I'm sure he's told to do this, so, I mean, how much of the blame really goes to him on this, but they do this thing where they telegraph the outcome of the match right before it actually happens, whether it's, you know, the WWE title match with Joe, or if it's something else, you know, where they'll say, oh, Joe's about to become WWE champion for the first time, or so-and-so is on their way to winning their third tag team title. And then invariably, of course, what that is a sort of wrestling code for is that they're not going to win the championship, and then inevitably they lose. So he has a habit, a very bad habit of doing that, whether he's told to or not, I don't know. But yes, does Corey Graves annoy me? Yes. Yes, he does. There's very few wrestling announcers, honestly, these days that don't annoy me. Let's see here. Let's go to area code 812. 812, you are on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, Solid Monster. My name is Andrew Davis. I'm from Salisbury, Indiana. How you doing?
I'm doing well, Andrew. How are you?
Not too bad. I was kind of bored during this show. Maybe I'm in the minority. But I'm not saying it was a bad show, but there was parts where I was just drifting in and out, just doing other stuff.
Well, did you see any of the other shows this weekend? Did you see the Evolve show or the AEW show?
I watched Evolve. I tried to watch Fight for the Fallen, but I was having issues with the Bleacher Report stream, so didn't get to watch it. I did watch Evolve. I enjoyed the Evolve show.
All right, what did you think was the best match from the Evolve show? Because I haven't watched it yet. I'm hoping to watch it tomorrow.
I liked Matt Riddle and Drew Gulak. Solid match.
Yeah, that's what I heard. What was it? I think a catch point match. Is that what it was? Or catch rules?
Yeah. Yeah, it was like, I think it was a catch point reunion.
Ah. Yeah, now I'm looking forward to that. Riddle was Evolve champion at one point, and he had matches. One match I saw that I really enjoyed, and I'm kind of hoping one day we get to see it in NXT, is Riddle and Keith Lee. I know they had actually multiple.
Oh, yeah.
They had multiple matches in Evolve for the championship. One, I only saw one of them. And based on the one that I saw, I am looking forward to at some point watching them do that, do their thing in NXT.
Yeah. Anyway, getting to the show tonight, I may have been the only one who was thinking this. Probably not. But so I was sitting there watching the pre-show, and I see Shinsuke Nakamura and Finn Balor on the pre-show. And I just think, God, you know, these guys will be in the main event, but instead we have Baron Corbin. You know?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, they had to finish the story, and they've been doing the Corbin thing now for a couple months, it feels like, and this, hopefully, fingers crossed, hopefully this was the blow-off, and we're done with Corbin, and we're done with Lacey Evans, and Becky Lynch can move on. We didn't see Sasha Banks tonight. No Sasha Banks. Maybe we'll see her on Raw tomorrow night. Maybe we won't. You know, we've heard rumors that she's going to be on her way back soon. I saw some picture of her online where it looked like she broke her nose. I don't know how recent that is. I know she was training over with some of the Joshi wrestlers in Japan. Maybe she was training with them and she broke her nose and now she's not coming back. I have no idea. But the quicker she can come back, the better. We need her back. We need her back as a heel. We need her back against Becky Lynch. Becky Lynch needs Sasha Banks back more than anybody else. If she ain't going to get Ronda Rousey back anytime soon, then she needs Sasha Banks back. But I know one thing. I don't want to see Becky Lynch and Lacey Evans, and I'm hoping that tonight was the end of that. 503, you were on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, Soul Monster, how you doing? This is Jamie from Portland, Oregon.
Hey, Jamie, what'd you think of the pay-per-view tonight?
I was on Twitter doing the usual rounds. I'm one of the lapsed fans. I was crapping all over the shows. Just really disinterested, to be honest. There's so much more negative nowadays from the main roster than positive, and it's kind of easy to, I guess, talk about that stuff when there's an overabundance of it. And then I kind of had an idea as callers were calling in and stuff, and I just kind of wanted to get your take. With Brock Lesnar winning the main event, I guess the only positive that I personally can take from him winning again tonight is if, and really only if, this somehow leads to a match with Bray Wyatt at SummerSlam.
Yeah, I mean...
I just kind of wanted to get your...
I literally just talked about that in trying to figure out who the hell you put him against. Lesnar, that is. Look, I don't know, because if you bring Bray back in his first match, he wrestles Brock Lesnar and he doesn't win, then he's dead. He's done. He's dead. So unless you bring him back with the idea that he's going to win, then that's fine. If he comes in and he fucking kills Brock Lesnar, fantastic. You've made a new star. And right out of the gate, Bray is the champion. He's probably got a huge fan following behind him. He's got his fucking puppets with him, and it's great. you know? So I would be in favor of that just because I don't know who else. Now, I have a wild idea. And I don't know how likely this is. It's probably, there's probably no chance whatsoever of this happening. But let me put forth a crazy idea. It's not so crazy, I don't think, but to some people it might be crazy. So, for years now, we have heard that Matt Riddle wants to retire Brock Lesnar. And I'm sure that there's probably no chance that that will actually happen. Brock Lesnar is not going anywhere anytime soon. He's going to sign a new contract, and all he has to do is show up a handful of times each year and make probably a few million dollars. It's not a bad gig. So I don't think Brock Lesnar is retiring anytime soon. However, if Paul Heyman really is taking over the reins, if he hasn't already, then very soon, on Monday Night Raw, and if the reports that we're hearing are true, that he might even be able to change whatever plans they have for SummerSlam, if that's what he wants to do. If I'm Paul Heyman, the first person I'm calling up from NXT to come over to my brand is Matt Riddle. Now, let me stop here. I already see people in the chat. There he goes again. There he goes again, riding the dick of Matt Riddle. What's this? What's up with Sala Monster? Look, I'm a big Matt Riddle fan. And the idea of Riddle, who also has a fight background, just like Brock does, combat sports and all that, right? Great athlete. He's a fresh face, great athlete. I'm a fan of his work. I'm a fan of his matches. And it's somebody different. Somebody new. Somebody fresh. In there against Brock Lesnar. I'm not saying he should beat him and become the champion on Raw. I'm not necessarily saying that. And it doesn't even necessarily need to happen at SummerSlam. But why not have Paul Heyman say, hey, I got a new recruit here on Monday Night Raw. And his name is Matt Riddle. They clearly see something in this guy. And from what I heard, again, I haven't watched it yet, but he probably had the match of the night on the Evolve show last night with Gulak. You know, the guy can go. The guy can work. I'm sure he'd love to work with Brock. He's made that very clear. I think they could have a different type of match than the match you would see with Brock and Seth, or Brock and Braun, and Brock and all these other people. It would be different. It might even be more competitive. Just an idea. I'm reaching to find new faces to put in there with Brock Lesnar. I'm looking at this Raw roster. I'm seeing AJ Styles is occupied. And I'm coming back to Seth, and I'm saying, I don't want to just go back to the same faces. You got to look to NXT. Where else do you look? Who else is in NXT? Adam Cole? Adam Cole's even smaller than Matt Riddle is. You want to see Adam Cole against Brock Lesnar? You want to see Johnny Gargano against Brock Lesnar? You want to see Tommaso Ciampa with his bum neck against Brock Lesnar getting suplexed on the back of his head? I don't think so. Find me somebody else. You know, Damian Priest just debuted in NXT. Big guy, right? Former Punishment Martinez from Ring of Honor. Maybe in a year, that could be a potential match. It's too early for that. Riddle is a guy who, if they wanted to, he's ready now. I just put that out there as an idea. You don't have to like it, but at least it's somebody different. Let's take a few more calls here. Let's go to 361. 361, you are on the air. What's your name, and where are you calling from?
How you doing, Solid Monster? This is Will. I'm calling from San Antonio, Texas. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well, Will. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you very much. Unfortunately, I had to work this evening, so I was only able to catch the ending of the pay-per-view. And so I did see the Brock Lesnar cash-in. So, you know, congrats, new Universal Champion.
So you caught one of the worst parts of the entire pay-per-view, and you missed all the good stuff at the beginning.
Yeah, exactly. So I heard though that it was a really good pay-per-view, with the exception of the finish. But I plan to go back to watch it again. My question for you is, and I'm seeing because I'm looking at the results right now. I saw that the Revival defeated the Usos, so they're still the Raw Tag Team Champions. Thank goodness, because I was worried that they were, again, going to just lose them. They were going to put them back on the Usos again. My question is, now that the Revival has now started to gain some momentum because they beat a really great team in the Usos. Where do you see them going from here? I mean, they have a couple of different options that they can go to. I mean, AOP has not appeared on TV, as far as I know, in what seems like forever. Do you think that they could possibly re-debut them and perhaps come off as proper opponents for them? Or do you see AOP as just not in the title picture at the moment?
Yeah, I don't see them. I don't see them in the title picture at the moment, and I don't think they're the right team for that spot. You know, they've debuted the Street Profits on Raw. They still have the NXT tag team titles. I don't know if they would want to get those belts off of them first before. I mean, look, they haven't even had a match yet on Raw, so I think it's even too early for them to start talking about that. Honestly, what do I think they're going to do? I think we're going to end up with another Revivals and Usos match, because that's what they do. They just go back to the well. They go back to the same people over and over again. So the next match will be 2 out of 3 falls, their new favorite stipulation, and eventually the Usos will win the titles. In fact, I think the only reason the Usos didn't win tonight was because the New Day won. And they probably didn't want to have the Usos and the New Day winning the titles on their respective brands on the same night, on the same pay-per-view. So maybe they'll wait a month, and at SummerSlam they'll come back with some kind of stipulation. They'll do the match again, and the Usos will win. And around and around and around and around we go. And nothing ever changes. That's what I think is, unfortunately, the most likely scenario. 305, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
This is Brendan from Miami, Florida. What's up, Solid Monster?
What's going on, Miami? What's the weather down there? Because it's hot as balls here in New York. What's it like in Miami right now?
About high 80s, 89 degrees.
All right. It's about what it is here, although we have 100% humidity.
Oh, that's rough.
Yeah.
So
you,
I thought the
you sound
show
very
was
interested, but go ahead.
Solid. The show was pretty solid. I mean, the matches that I thought that were kind of boring were Bayley versus Nikki Cross and Alexa Bliss. And I didn't like the finish of the Brock Lesnar. I didn't like how Brock Lesnar won the championship back. I thought Seth Rollins should have kept the championship and defended it in SummerSlam. But I also have I want your opinion on this. What do you think of the idea of having Carmella as a SmackDown Women's Championship and R-Truth as the 24/7 championship? I think it would be a great combo. I think the fans would like it, and I wanted to know your opinion about it.
So Carmella as the SmackDown Women's Champion, is that what you said?
Yeah, as a babyface, though.
As a babyface. Who is the SmackDown? Oh, Bayley is the champion right now. Yeah, no, I don't have any interest in that. I mean, we've seen Carmella as we've seen her as a heel, but we've seen her as the champion already. She's not very good. Bayley, I would rather see honestly, whether you bring Sasha back, Ember Moon isn't doing much of anything. I would even be in favor of them doing something with, like, a Sonya Deville. I think Sonya Deville is very talented, and I think we've already seen Mandy Rose against Asuka for the championship, and there's another one, by the way. What a fucking waste that is. You've got Asuka and Kairi Sane. I don't know what they're waiting for to do something with them. Them and the Iconics, who are a joke, as the women's tag team champions on, I guess the women's tag titles are not brand specific, but yeah, you've got Asuka doing a tag team thing when she should be a single. You've got Ember Moon, who should be challenging for a championship. I'd be in favor of Bayley and Ember Moon. Why not? It's two baby faces, but who cares? It'd be a good match. It's somebody the fans like. It's somebody the fans can get behind. That's the match I want to see. I have no problem with R-Truth being the 24/7 champion. I actually have been one of the defenders of the whole 24/7 stuff, even in the face of people who think I'm out of my mind and that it's terrible and it's ruining the shows, you know, and all of this other stuff. Now the idea that you're going to make Carmella a champion just because it's funny, just to add her to the act, I don't like that at all. I don't think Carmella should be anywhere near a championship right now. I'd much rather see an Ember Moon or somebody like that, or an Oscar or a Sasha Banks challenging Bayley next. No more Alexa, no more Nikki. The stuff with Alexa and Nikki is going to play itself out. Alexa's going to show her true colors at some point, and we all know it's going to lead to Nikki and Alexa, and that's fine. Let that story play out. Get somebody new in there to challenge for the women's championship. I almost don't even care who it is, but one person I would like to not see in that role is Carmella. So no, I don't have any interest in that. 716, do a few more calls. You are on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Man, it's Pat from Buffalo, New York, man. What's up, man? First time caller.
Another New Yorker. Well, thank you for calling in. I appreciate it. What'd you think of the show tonight?
Man, I'm going to be honest. I caught a few. There were some matches that I just wasn't interested in. The problem I have with WWE, man, is that a lot of it just seems too predictable. I don't like how, where it's going. And I, you know, there was a few matches that caught my eye that are pretty good, but it's just like that one thing at the end ruined it for me, because I thought I, you know, I have faith in it, man. Like, I'm like, okay, you know what? This is, you know, this is going somewhere. And then it's like, maybe after the third or fourth match, I just started feeling down again. And, you know, and I'm not even like a AEW mark, but like I look at AEW, and the reason I appreciate that so much, and I know a lot of WWE fans are trying to defend WWE, and I get it, but I support AEW because I feel like in their defense, they have more an original, and, you know, they're just doing with, you know, doing good, entertaining the crowd. And even if, you know, not saying every match, you know, is great, but I feel like they have something. Like, I feel like I'm loving wrestling again, instead of, you know, WWE, and it's the same boring shit I see every week on Raw. And, you know, I don't know what WWE is going to do now. You know what I mean? I know we got hope in future, you know, storylines and all that, but it's just like, I just think the biggest problem in WWE is Vince McMahon, man. Like, that's where the problem is. It ain't all this other stuff. It's Vince McMahon. That's the problem, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much stating the obvious. It's still the vision of one man, and what he wants, he gets. It's his show. It's his company. It's his show. He can do whatever he wants, and we're just sort of slaves to whatever it is that he feels he wants to do. Now, is he going to be genuine in bringing in Heyman and Bischoff and letting them sort of run the shows? Who knows? History says no. He's never played well with others before. I mentioned the story a few weeks ago on the podcast about Bill Watts. You know, 1995, he brought Bill Watts into the company. He was going to give Bill Watts full creative control over the product. He's like, all right, well, you know, the product's not really going so well. Let's bring in the cowboy, and we'll give you full creative control. Full autonomy is what Bill Watts understood that he would be getting. And one of the first decisions that he made was that he wanted to build around Bret Hart as his champion. Coming up, you know, into the coming year in 96, he wanted to build as Bret, you know, with Bret as his champion, not Shawn Michaels. And Vince McMahon said, no, I want Shawn Michaels. And Bill Watts said, well, we can't work together. That was the end of the relationship. Now, granted, what was that, 1995? All right, well, what was that, 25 years ago? Almost 25 years. That's a long time ago. Times change. Vince is older. Maybe he's kind of realizing the error of his ways. He's going to be a little more open to ideas and visions of other people. Yeah, well, I'll believe it when I see it. I'll believe it when I see it. I haven't noticed any radical changes on the TV show. We had one good Raw 2 weeks ago. Last week, I thought Raw sucked. I thought Raw was shit last week. SmackDown, I enjoyed. I enjoyed SmackDown, but I thought Raw was garbage. Now, was that just a one-week thing, or is that just the way it's going to be? They went right back to the way they were. I don't know. We'll see tomorrow night. But, yeah, I mean, of course, it's Vince McMahon's company. What he wants, he gets. Doesn't matter what you and I want. Doesn't matter what this guy, 443. Hey, 443, Vince McMahon doesn't give a shit what you want. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hey, I've managed to get over it. Solo Monster after 131 tries. I'm glad to be on. This is Justin Goodman, the marksman, calling from Columbia, Maryland.
Hey, Justin. 131 times. That might be a record.
Yeah, I just kept hitting the button a bunch. So I heard everybody asking you about the WWE Championship and the Universal Championship pictures. I wanted to ask you actually about the U.S. title. I was talking to a friend earlier, and he was wondering why they downgraded AJ to the U.S. title. Do you think that it's more of a case that they're trying to bring a little prestige to it and build Ricochet maybe as like a next main event guy by having him pick up the big victory over AJ? Because I think at SummerSlam, He's probably going to get a big win over AJ for the title again, make it a bigger deal than it was when he beat Joe for it, and that maybe will give him a little more credibility in the future, maybe challenging for the Universal title at some point. Just want to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think it might be a case where they think that AJ, or Ricochet rather, is better off chasing. I pitched the idea 2 weeks ago, and I did tonight as well, of a ladder match between them at SummerSlam. I think a ladder match with AJ and Ricochet could be off the charts. And you got that big emotional moment at the end of Ricochet reaching up and pulling down the championship and winning the title. Unless, of course, they, you know, go with the other idea I pitched, which is having Finn Balor ruin his moment there at the very end and join the club, which also would be kind of interesting. But yeah, I think that could be part. I don't think it's about making the U.S. title mean more, because I honestly don't think they give a shit about making the U.S. title mean more. But I do think they want to. I do think they see something in Ricochet. And I think they want to do what they can to help get him over as a babyface, and this could be their way of doing that. So that part I do agree with. I want to give a shout-out to Rhythm in the chat. He donated, I thought it was dollars at first. It looks like it might be a Japanese denomination. 200. It says $200, but I don't think it's American dollars. He says, great job as always, so thank you to him for that. But I have no idea what that converts to. Maybe somebody in the chat can help me out here. I've dollar-wise, I don't know what that converts to. Whatever it is, though, thank you. Wow, that sounds like a lot, so I appreciate that. Do a few more calls. We'll go to area code 804. You are on the air. What's your name, and where are you calling from?
Hey, this is Steven calling from Virginia, and I was actually able to attend a SmackDown house show last night. That was pretty good.
Wow, what was let me ask you this. Before you move on, let me ask you this. What was the attendance like at that SmackDown house show?
I thought it was pretty good. It didn't look really empty to me. My row wasn't full, but I thought it was a decent crowd considering how many events were going on, you know, last night. But I thought it was an enjoyable show, and I got to see Finn Balor pin Nakamura in a triple threat title defense match. And I got to see Aleister Black actually wrestle Andrade and pin him, so overall pretty decent show, better than the TVs. And I was wondering, do you think there could be a possible Demon Balor return, possibly against Nakamura or Aleister Black?
Yeah, SummerSlam is their second biggest show of the year, so they had the Demon character at WrestleMania. We haven't seen him since. We haven't seen much of Finn at all, really, since then. So if they were going to bust them out again, SummerSlam would be the place for it. They could do, again, you know, Balor and Nakamura, you know, even though that kind of flies in the face of their whole no rematch rule, but they could have Finn win, you know, become number one contender, have the Demon wrestle Nakamura. I don't know. It just feels so tired to me. That's why I think I kind of embraced this whole idea of maybe if they could find a way to get him as part of the club, but then he'd have to switch brands. Although, they could just make him a wild card. He could be a wild card every week and just be part of the club. I would hope with Bischoff and Heyman taking the reins soon, though, that well, if they're going to commit to this brand split, they've got to commit to it. You can't have wild card rule. You can't have mixing of the brands. So I have a funny feeling that soon enough, whatever brand you're on, you're going to just have to be on that show. But yeah, SummerSlam is the time I would think they would do the Demon. I mean, when else are you going to do it? You're going to do it? What's the pay-per-view in September? Hell in a Cell? I don't even know what these pay-per-views are anymore. September, October, December. December should be TLC. I don't even know what the shows are in September and October. I have no idea. I think one of them is Hell in a Cell. The other one maybe is, it's not Backlash. Backlash was going to be in June. They canceled that. I have no idea. Clash of Champions? Do they even have that anymore? I don't even know. 347, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Oh, I'm on the air.
You're on the air.
Oh, hey, Fall Monster, what's up? It's Bradley from good old BK, New York.
Hey, Bradley, what's going on?
Not much. Just trying to recollect my thoughts after this pay-per-view.
Okay.
I think it was a pretty much average show. Pretty weak second half. Pretty intrigued what they're going to do with the WWE title heading to SummerSlam.
Yeah,
I think that.
Oh, go ahead.
I think they might possibly go with Mustafa Ali. They could go with a story, since you could say that Ali was abandoned and pushed aside after his injury, while Kofi reaped the benefits and got the glory.
No. So I'm going to interrupt you there, because that, and thank you for the call. That is very interesting. I had not thought about that, but that is a great point. You know, we've been getting these Ali vignettes on TV now for many weeks, and there's no indication of what the hell they mean or what he's going to be doing. It's just him talking about his life, him being a police officer, and you can't let evil triumph over good and all this other stuff, motivational stuff. But that's a great point. Ali was supposed to be in the Elimination Chamber back in February, and he had a match on TV against Randy Orton. He suffered a concussion, and he got bounced. He was in the middle of the biggest push of his life, thanks to Daniel Bryan, who stuck up for him behind the scenes. And so he was not medically cleared to compete. And Kofi took his spot. And that's when Kofi Mania started to take hold. And he was in there with Bryan at the very end. He lost, but the people were behind him. And it just sort of went from there. And then Kofi went on to WrestleMania, and he became WWE Champion. So Ali could come back. Normally in a situation like this, somebody like Ali would be the heel. He'd come back, he'd beat up Kofi or something, you took my spot, and it would be heel versus babyface. But you don't even have to have a heel versus babyface. You could just have Ali say he could fight his way into contention, and the story could just be very simple. You know, I need to be the champion because my opportunity was taken from me, and no hard feelings, but you took my spot, and now I want to take your title. And you could do babyface against babyface at SummerSlam. I don't know if they look at that as being a strong enough WWE championship match. But whatever the WWE title match is going to be, it's going to be below whatever Brock Lesnar does. It almost doesn't even matter who you put Kofi in there against. It ain't going to be the main event. So Kofi and Ali, there's a fresh match. There's a match we haven't seen before. You know what? I'd be down for that. I would be down for Kofi and Ali at SummerSlam. And I'd even be, you know what? I'd be okay with putting the title on Ali. Be fine with me. Area code 6. Let's skip that one. We'll do 865. 865, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, Blomaster. This is Chris from Tennessee, man. How you doing?
I'm doing well, Chris. How are you?
I'm not doing bad, man. Just Extreme Rules.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I know. Brock Lesnar again.
Well, I mean what, on the whole, let me ask you, Brock. Let me interrupt you. What did you think on the whole? Now, forget the Brock Lesnar thing. On the whole, what did you think of the pay-per-view?
Oh, no, overall, I thought it was a good show. It obviously wasn't the best show of the year, but it was still pretty good, man. That Cesaro, that was the Black, man. Damn.
Yeah, that was...
That shit was awesome.
Dude. I would say that probably was my favorite match of the night.
That was mine too, man. I kind of don't, you know what, I don't like 50-50 booking, and I don't, but I kind of want a rivalry out of this, because I think this has a lot of mileage out of it.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, and I said this during my review, I think, and thank you for the call, I think that you can get at least one, if not two more matches out of this. You could do a match on TV, and maybe you build to a third and a final match at SummerSlam. I think Black should get the win. You might want to have Cesaro win one match on TV, but in the end, Black wins the feud, and then he moves on. You know, whether he moves on to wrestle for the Intercontinental title, he could challenge Nakamura, because it certainly seemed like he was positioned as a babyface tonight. I thought maybe he'd be a heel. So you can do Aleister Black and Nakamura coming out of SummerSlam, maybe for the IC title, if Nakamura holds on to the title. Or you could put him in there with somebody else. But yeah, the match was so good tonight, I can't possibly be against the idea of them doing it again. If the match is really good, it's one of those things where I can break my own rule and I'm okay with doing a couple of rematches. You know, no one wants to see a rematch of a match that sucks. I think that's the big issue with like Seth Rollins and Baron Corbin. Nobody was begging to see Rollins and Corbin for a third time. And yet we got it. Black and Cesaro, I'm okay with that. Let's take one last call here, and then we'll wrap up. Area code 702. You are on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
This is Randall from Las Vegas, Nevada. I just want to know, Solid Monster, with Bischoff and Heyman starting full-time next week, do you see any significant changes or radical changes with the WWE product going forward?
I don't in the near term. Talk to me in 6 months, and I'll see. It goes to what I was saying earlier. I don't know how serious Vince McMahon is about this. Eric Bischoff hasn't even gotten to Connecticut yet. He hasn't even attended his first SmackDown. He starts officially this week on Tuesday. You know, he may sit there in gorilla position next to Vince McMahon, and they may want to rip each other's hair out of their heads. There's no way of knowing. So I think it all depends on Vince. Is Vince willing to cede enough power and authority to these people? You know, this is his product. This is his baby. Is he willing to give Eric Bischoff, a man that he once wished death upon, real power in his company? Bischoff has never had power before in WWE in any way. He was a performer. That's all he was. He was not an actual general manager. He was not a creative person behind the scenes. He didn't offer ideas. He came to work, he performed, he read his script, and he went home. That's all he did. This is a totally new role for him. He's been out of the loop as far as wrestling now for many years, since TNA. That's going back a number of years now. I don't know what to expect. I don't know if, and if we do get changes, who's to say they're going to be good? I think Bischoff gets more credit for being some kind of creative genius than he really is. It's been a very, very long time since WCW. It's been over 20 years since Bischoff was any kind of real creative force and had some ideas in WCW. TNA didn't really have a great run there. So I don't know what to expect. It's kind of a, no pun intended, it's kind of a wild card. But should be fun to follow. I will do, I'll do a couple more here just because this person's been waiting for half an hour. Let's go to area code 503. You are on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Am I on?
You're on. I know you've been waiting a while.
Hi. Hey, Jason. I'm Aaron from Kentucky.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing good. Finally, I got on. I didn't watch the pay-per-view because I don't have my PS4 here with me right now. I'm actually in Louisville with friends. But I don't have the. I bought the Xbox, the original Xbox. I showed you what I know, but I don't have the PS4 with me, so I actually missed the show. But I've been following kind of the tweets as to what's been going on, as far as you know, as far as the Knights concerned. And they said that Brock cashed in his briefcase, and they gave him the belt again, which you know, maybe them. I guess I have a bit of a point and a bit of a question because. They have this tendency to go, keep going back to Brock. Now, because he's a three-time champion, my question is this. Also I'd like to say, I think they should do away with the brand split because it seems like, and this kind of leads to the question, do you think the WWE does not care about the Universal Championship? Because it seems like they put it on a guy who they pay so much money to stay home, to show up whenever he wants, and like whenever he feels like it. I mean, you know, they can't tell Brock, hey, you got to be here for blah, 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 blah. They put it in his contract. But do you think that they don't, like, they legit don't care about the Universal Championship because they gave it to Brock again? And my guess is, and I've thought about this two ways. One, they're going to keep it on Brock until SummerSlam. Or if I go back to my original point, they're going to have him hold it again until WrestleMania.
Well, I certainly hope that's not the case. I mean, you know, you're saying it's one of two scenarios. He either drops it at SummerSlam or he drops it at WrestleMania. Those, to me, are the only two scenarios there could be. So I'm hoping they have him drop it at SummerSlam. To say that they don't care about the Universal title, though, I think is wrong because, you know, Brock is their highest paid guy. And I don't have an inside view of their contracts. I would bet everything that Brock is their highest paid performer. And he's their top performer. And the Universal title is positioned more often than not in the main event of all their pay-per-views. So how can you say they don't care about the Universal Championship? I would say that they care less about the WWE Championship at this point than the Universal Championship. I think they do care about it. And in their view, they think Brock is box office. Brock is money. Brock is their top star. So they keep going back to the well. And I think that's going to come back to bite them on the ass if they keep that title on him for too long, because I think that's part of what did so much damage to Raw, is having an absentee champion for so long. It just makes for a boring show. I mean, they have a boring show most weeks even without Brock as the champion. It's not like Brock lost the title at WrestleMania and Raw went back to being as good as it used to be. There are some weeks where Raw was as bad as it has ever been without Brock as the champion. So Brock is just a small part of the problem. If he drops it at SummerSlam, no problem. If he holds it until next year, we got a big problem. Let's go to 205, and then we'll do one more after this. 205, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
My name is Ryan, and I'm calling from Alabama.
Hey, Ryan, how are you?
Doing all right. How are you?
I'm very tired, but I'm doing very well.
I was calling to ask you about Aleister Black. I was thinking about where they could lead with this. Maybe they continue with the whole who's, like, maybe he goes back to his room and says, who's going to be next to knock on my door? And maybe they go for maybe a few months with him beating random challengers. Like, maybe he beats an Andrade on TV, and maybe he beats a Shinsuke or a Balor. Maybe he gets to the point where it's like, okay, I'm ready for, I need a bigger challenge. And maybe they have Aleister Black go up against Brock Lesnar. I was wondering what you thought about that.
Well, I mean, they have Aleister Black as a, I think as a SmackDown star. So I don't know how that would work if Brock is on Raw with the Universal title. Could that be a match down the road? It could be, but he just debuted. So it's not realistic. You can't, I mean, I know I was pitching the whole Matt Riddle thing earlier, and even that is probably unrealistic. But they just debuted him, and he's on a different brand. I think it could be a big match in a year or two, but I don't see that happening anytime soon. And we will end with 714. You're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Tall Monster, it's Mikey O'Shea. How you doing?
Hey, Mikey, how are you?
What did I tell you, Saul Monster? What did I tell you? If Baron Corbin used his biker gimmick in the pay-per-view, you would have seen the new Universal Champion.
What biker gimmick is this that you're talking about?
The biker gimmick, when he came out with the leather vest and, you know, showed out his belly button and all that. Remember? Remember that old Baron Corbin?
I see. Well, you know, he can't do that anymore because he shaved off all the skullet that he had going on. He doesn't have the hair anymore.
I mean, that doesn't matter. Anyways, may I have a suggestion or a prediction, may I add, for SummerSlam this coming year?
Sure.
Okay. AEW has no fucking chance, and here's why. The next Monday Night Raw, Seth Rollins is going to cash in his rematch clause. He's going to almost beat Brock Lesnar for the title. And then Baron Corbin shows up. It costs a disqualification, yes. But when Baron Corbin thinks, when Brock Lesnar thinks Baron Corbin was on his side, boom, end of days to Brock Lesnar. Which leads into the next week's Raw between Baron Corbin and Brock Lesnar for the Universal Championship. But then when Baron Corbin almost beats, Brock Lesnar, out comes Seth Rollins and costs Baron Corbin his title shot, which leads into a number one contenders match between Baron Corbin and Seth Rollins, number four. And I know you're very excited for that, Soul Monster. But anyways, when it gets to the end of the match, Brock Lesnar will come out and beat the crap out of both of them, which leads into the main event of SummerSlam. And you know what that is?
I don't, but I'm sure you're going to tell me.
Brock Lesnar versus Seth Rollins versus Baron Corbin.
Oh, Jesus Christ. You know
who's going to win?
I know what you're going to say, and I'm hoping you'll swerve me here.
Wait, there's more.
Oh boy,
there's more. Just when Baron Corbin wins the match, out comes Vince McMahon and makes another wild turn of events. He now makes the 24/7 title the Wild title. So then R-Truth comes out, rolls up Baron Corbin, and he becomes the Universal Champion, which leads to Baron Corbin going after R-Truth for WrestleMania.
Well, I can honestly say you have given this more thought than I'm sure WWE has given thought to what they want their entire SummerSlam card to be.
Exactly. Hire me, goddammit.
Well, there you go. Well, you got the platform. If somebody's listening, Mikey is available. Mikey is available for a trial run if you want to give him a shot.
Or for the love of God, buy a t-shirt at Pro Wrestling Tees Mikey O'Shea. Please, help me invest on more Baron Corbin t-shirts because I'm running out of money here.
Well, there you go. Thank you, Mikey. I'm going to let you go. But there's Mikey O'Shea once again back on the podcast. He is once again our final caller, too. I didn't plan that either. That's literally the final caller I was going to go to tonight. And it turned out to be Mikey. Mikey is the world's biggest Baron Corbin fan, although he's a much bigger fan of Baron Corbin, the old Baron Corbin. The Baron Corbin with the belly button and the leather vest, who I think is dead and buried, and I don't think we're going to see him again anytime soon. And if they do, in fact, do what Mikey suggested, that might just be what breaks me, and I might have to stop watching WWE. But in any event, thank you to Mikey, and thank you to everybody else for the... it's weird, like it's almost 1 o'clock in the morning, and every time Mikey calls in, he's got to be on the West Coast. I'm pretty sure he's a West Coast guy. Because if he's on the East Coast, as amped up as he is on 5 cups of coffee, how can you do that at 1 o'clock in the morning? So he's got to be a West Coast guy. I just don't see how that's possible. But thank you to everybody who called in tonight and was in the chat. I love each and every one of you. Everybody who donated via Super Chat, I know I didn't get to everybody, and I apologize, but you're a one-man operation here doing a live show. I can't possibly read all the Super Chats in real time. I'll go back and look at them after. But thank you very much, everybody, for all of your support. This show will be archived in a few hours. Sometimes it takes a while to process. So if you want to go back and listen to this show, parts that you may have missed if you tuned in late, give it at least a couple of hours, and this show will process and be posted up on the YouTube channel. I will also push the audio out, so you know, out to the feed. So if you are subscribed to the Sound Off in iTunes or any of those platforms, I am going to push the audio out here in the next few hours, most likely. And so you'll be able to listen back to it that way. And I'm all out of time here. That's your Extreme Rules review for 2019. We have Raw coming up tomorrow night. I'll be back for the full Sound Off podcast coming up this Sunday, each and every Sunday. TheSolomonster.com. You could also get it on iTunes, and we are on Pandora. Pandora, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, all major podcasting platforms. We're on there, and I appreciate all of your support. So until next time, be well, stay safe. Thank you for tuning in tonight, and I will see you guys back here again on the YouTube channel for more content coming up here in the coming days. Until then, take care, everybody.
The Solomonster sounds off.
Harlem Heat 2000, Techno Team 2000, LOD 2000, WrestleMania 2000. Anything as a rule of thumb with 2000 in the name, you know it sucked.
The Solomonster sounds off. Available wherever you hear podcasts, including iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, and more.
Want more content?
Visit youtube.com/thesolomonster for Sound Off extras and more. And follow the Solomonster on Twitter @Solomonster.
Solomonster.
Solomonster.
Put that cigarette out.
Solomonster sounds off.